श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग। नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरम चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिके। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। टेक्स्ट 14 ऑफ द फर्स्ट चैप्टर ऑफ कैंटो 8। अथाग्रे ऋषय कर्माण ईहंते कर्म हेतवे ईहमानो हि पुरुष प्रायो निहं प्रपद्यते। अथाग्रे ऋषय कर्माण ईहंते कर्म हेतवे ईहमानो हि पुरुष प्रायो निहं प्रपद्यते। अथाग्रे ऋषय कर्माण ईहंते कर्म हेतवे ईहमानो हि पुरुष प्रायो निहं प्रपद्यते। Ladies, please. अथ देयरफॉर अग्रे इन द बिगिनिंग ऋषयः ऑल लर्नेड ऋषिज सेंटली पर्सन्स कर्माणि फ्रूटिव एक्टिविटीज ईहंते एग्जीक्यूट अकर्म फ्रीडम फ्रॉम फ्रूटिव रिजल्ट्स हेतवे For the purpose of ihamanaha, engaging in such activities, he indeed, Purushaha, ए पर्सन प्रायः ऑलमोस्ट ऑलवेज अनिहाम लिबरेशन फ्रॉम कर्म प्रपद्यते अटेन्स. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Therefore, to enable people to reach the stage of activities that are not tinged by fruitive results, great saints first engage people in fruitive activities. For unless one begins by performing activities as recommended in the Shastras, one cannot reach the stage of liberation or activities that produce no reactions. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, text 9, Lord Krishna advises, Yajnyarthat karmano nyatra lokoyam karma bandhanaha. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. Otherwise, work binds one to this material world. Generally, everyone is attracted to hard labor for becoming happy in this material world. But although various activities are going on all over the world simply for the sake of happiness, unfortunately, only problems are being created from such activities. Therefore, it is advised that active persons engage in activities of Krishna consciousness, which are called yajna, because then they will gradually come to the platform of devotional service. Yajna means Lord Vishnu, the Yajna Purusha, the enjoyer of all sacrifices. Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the enjoyer, and therefore, if we begin our activities for His satisfaction, we will gradually lose our taste for material activities. Suta Goswami declared to the General Assembly of Sages at Naimisharanya, Ata pumbirdvijashreshtha varnashrama vibhagashah svanushthitasya dharmasya samsiddhir haritoshanam. O best among the twice born, it is concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging his prescribed duties according to caste divisions and order of life is to please the Lord Hari. According to Vedic principles, everyone must act according to his classification as Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Brahmachari, Gruhastha, Vanaprastha or Sannyasi. Everyone should progress toward perfection by acting in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. Samsiddhir Hari Toshanam. One cannot please Krishna by sitting idly. One must act according to the directions of the spiritual master for the sake of pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then one will gradually come to the stage of pure devotional service. As confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, Naishkarmyam api achyuta bhava varjitam nushobhate jnanam alam niranjanam. Knowledge of self-realization, even though freed from all material affinity, does not look well if devoid of a conception of the infallible God. Jnanis recommend that one adopt Naishkarmya by not doing anything but simply meditating and thinking of Brahman. But this is impossible unless one realizes Parabrahman Krishna. If there is no Krishna consciousness, any kind of activity, be it philanthropic, political or social, simply causes karma bandhana, bondage to material work. As long as one is entangled in karma bandhana, one must accept different types of bodies that spoil the human form of facility. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita 6.3, karma yoga is recommended. Aru rukshor muner yogam karma karanam uchyate yoga arudhasya tasyeva shamak karanam uchyate. For one who is a neophyte in the yoga system, work is said to be the means. And for one who has already attained to yoga, cessation of all material activities is said to be the means. Nonetheless, karmendriyani samyama yaste manasasmaran इंद्रियार्थान विमूढ़ात्मा मिथ्याचार सोच्यते. One who restrains the senses and organs of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender. One should act for Krishna very seriously in order to become fully Krishna conscious and should not sit down to imitate such great personalities as Haridas Thakur. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur condemned such imitations. He said, दुष्ट मन तुम्हें किसेर वैष्णव प्रतिष्ठार तरे निर्जनेर घरे तव हरि नाम केवल कैतव. माई डियर माइंड, वट काइंड ऑफ अ डिवोटी आर यू? सिंपली फॉर चीप एडोरेशन यू सिट इन अ सॉलिटरी प्लेस एंड प्रिटेंड टू चैंट द हरे कृष्ण महामंत्र, बट दिस इज ऑल चीटिंग. Recently at Mayapur, an African devotee wanted to imitate Haridas Thakur, but after 15 days he became restless and went away. Do not suddenly try to imitate Haridas Thakur. Engage yourself in Krishna conscious activities and gradually you will come to the stage of liberation. Muktir hitvanyatha rupam swarupena vyavasthitihi. ओम अज्ञान तिमिरंधस्य ज्ञानांजन शलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः. श्री चैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदांतिकं वांछाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिंधुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद. हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे. Verses and purports like these. Koloka Prabhu, can you cut down the volume a little bit? Down. That's good. Thank you. Verses and purports like these are my favorites. One, because Prabhupada is extremely direct. He doesn't speak in, if you notice in the purport near the end, he doesn't speak in third person that one should not. He's telling us, do not. He's very much second person. Speaking to us directly. Anyway, let's first look at what the verse talks about. He says, "Atha agre." First of all, "Rishaya karmani hante." All the sages who want to train the, conditioned soul, they have a particular plan. And it seems like all sages have similar plan. And we see that in our lineage, Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta also had very much the same plan. And it says, Rishaya karma nihante. Karma nihante means they engage themselves, of course, otherwise they would be hypocrites. They engage themselves and others in activities, in duties. Akarma hetave, for the purpose of bringing a person to the stage of akarma. There is vikarma. Vikarma is activity that one should not do because the Vedas prohibit such activity. Then there is karma, activities that one should do. And then there is akarma, those activities by such by which there are no reactions, no material reactions. But that stage is a later stage. So first, one should perform one's prescribed activities. So it says, karmani ihante akarma hetave. He says, ihamano hi purusha prayaha aniham prapadyate. So praya, we hear from Bhagavatam, means almost always. This is the strategy that is used to bring the person from the platform of performing their prescribed duties to performing activities that are fully devoid of any karmic reaction. So now let's see. And Prabhupada takes this verse and he presents it in our context. And our context he gives is that as young devotees, don't sit idly. That's the message. Don't sit idly. Engage in activities of serving Krishna almost constantly till we become, I guess, mature to simply sit and chant without feeling the sense of I have such and such responsibility to execute. Now that's where he wants to take us, but to get there, he's calling upon us to don't try to think that as soon as you come to Krishna consciousness, somehow it means that you have no responsibility. He's telling us, don't think like that. Don't think that you can look at Haridas Thakur's life and say, hey, this is pretty cool. All he did was sit and chant there. I like that. I can do that too. And he says there was one African devotee who tried to do that. And in 15 days, he didn't stop. What happened? He left. Because it's too much. So now, when you look at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's example, here's what he did, apparently. His brahmachari ashram, or wherever the devotees were living, he would fill the rooms with books. Fill it to such capacity that there was no space. He would open the door and there were just books everywhere. No space to lie down or sit, nothing. The room was all filled with books. So they would go and ask Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the rooms are filled with books, where can we lie down? And Bhaktisiddhanta's answer was, distribute the books, make space, and then you can lie down. That was the message to him, that don't sit idly. You see, notice in Prabhupada's, he took the same spirit, Srila Prabhupada, and he kept everyone busy like anything. He kept everyone so busy that we hear, let's say in the context of book distribution, they would come back and give Prabhupada new scores. Prabhupada, this month or whatever, this marathon was a record. We did $1 million. And Prabhupada's answer was not excellent, very good. Let's have cheesecake and pizza for breakfast. Prabhupada's answer was very good. Now double it. Make it double. Or when the Chaitanya Charitamrita was being supposedly to be published, Prabhupada was translating and all the tapes were getting stacked at the BBT archives. And Prabhupada said to them, why is it that you're not printing? I said, Prabhupada, there's a lot of backlog. Prabhupada said, I need Chaitanya Charitamrita to be published soon. So he gave them a deadline. I forget the specifics of it. He said, in 2 months, for such and such date, I need a Chaitanya Charitamrita set, everything done, bound with nice jacket, everything in my hands. 2 months. And that time Rameshwar Swami was the leader of BBT. He said, Srila Prabhupada, that's impossible. That's impossible. And Prabhupada told him, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. Make it happen. So they argued. They tried to push back. I don't think it's possible. How is it? So many tapes are there. Even if everyone read, you know, went through, typed everything, it has to be, you know, there's a whole process there. Prabhupada said, I don't know. And he kept translating and sent tapes. So since they were pushed to a wall like this, it seems that they figured out, okay, no one's going to sleep. They are going to have shifts. Someone would translate for 10 hours, Next person would come, take on 10 more hours. Another person would come, 10 hours. They just went 24 hours on, you know, some shifts constantly going on. They translated, proofread, they sent to the publisher, and by the date Prabhupada had given him, that book was put in his hands. And it said that the devotees did not sleep, did not eat, they were completely in anxiety. Of course, that's Prabhupada's style, a little emergency in that case. But even on a daily basis, he did not like to see devotees idling, just sort of floating here and there. He wanted to see that they are constantly engaged in service. Now one may say, what's the purpose? Like, why? So here's the actual reason that I've understood and I appreciate. Before we come to devotional service, Prabhupada starts the purport with, here. Everyone is attracted to hard labor for becoming happy in this material world. But although various activities are going on all over the world simply for the sake of happiness, unfortunately only problems are being created from such fruitive activities. So before we come to Krishna consciousness, we engage ourselves in what we call hard labor activities. Because there is a promise in this world. And everyone wants to realize the fruit of that promise. And that promise is, if you work hard, you become tired? No, happy. That's the promise. If you work hard, you'll become happy. And everyone tries that formula. They try it. Some think they succeed, some know that they don't succeed, or they have mixed results. Now in that scenario, enter a devotee of Krishna, who then gives us the message of Krishna consciousness, that this world is full of suffering, you're not meant to work like this, like an animal, Prabhupada's phrase, no, work like an ass, you're not meant to live like this, there is so much more to life, you're meant to realize your relationship with Krishna, it's through the process of chanting, devotional services, chanting, feasting, dancing, oh, very attractive. So what happens is, most likely, 95% of the time, a person takes up devotional activity, one, naturally, because it's attractive, no doubt. Second, it actually reinforces the rejection. Rejection of activities in the world, rejection of everything that we were doing prior to it. And that rejection looks like what we call detachment. Actually, it's not detachment. It's called aversion. In Sanskrit, aversion is called raga dvesha. Dvesha actually is envy, but aversion to something. Ah, I don't like it. I don't do it because I don't like it. Now, aversion looks very much like detachment. Because, like, I don't like it. I don't do it. Everyone else is working very hard. I don't like to do it. I don't do it. Oh, how detached. This is not detachment. It looks like it, but it's not. So what happens is when one is averse to something, it is the same as, or one gets the same result as if one is very attached to that thing. Attachment is this side of the coin, and aversion is this side of the coin. And both give the same result per se. So I'll tell you a little. There were two young men who had, and I've said this in the past, so, but it's contextually relevant. Two men, young men, decided that they will try out some time in a monastery. So they were going from their village to another village, where the monastery was. And both were very determined, they were hopeful, they were very inspired, and they were going. So what happens is that they come to a particular place for the night, and when they're moving from this village to that village, they come to a place where they see a very young lady, very attractive, beautiful, with nice bodily features, nice countenance, extremely nice, beautiful face that naturally one would be attracted to. And she was standing at the edge of a well, contemplating suicide. She was about to jump in. So one of the two men saw this. And when the woman was about to take a plunge, he ran, held her by the waist, very thin, slender, nice waist, whatever, held her by the waist and brought her down. And I sort of told her, please don't kill yourself like this, this is not proper. The second one, of course, stood afar. The incident was over, they moved on. About 2 days later, the second young man, told the first one, I'm very disappointed in you. Okay, what's the disappointment? He said, you know, we're going to join the monastery and we don't have any interactions with women, what to speak of touching them. You actually carried this girl by her waist. So the first one said, which woman are you talking about? He said, "The 2 days ago, the one that you saved from dying at the well." He said, Okay, now I remember. But here's the problem. I carried her for 2 seconds. You've been carrying her for 2 days. That aversion actually is nothing but an attachment. It just sounds very detachment-like, but it's not. So this aversion to one's activity is what the sages want to make sure that rather than aversion, we have genuine detachment. And that genuine detachment comes, here's the magic formula, comes from actually performing one's activities in a dutiful manner. That dutiful execution brings detachment. Aversion does not bring detachment. Aversion brings the same problems of attachment. The sages are very thoughtful. And we'll see the same pattern in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna said, I don't want to fight. Why should I fight? And he gives 5 wonderful reasons. We recently tested our Bhakti Shastri class students on the 5 reasons. So Goloka will know it off his hat. The 5 reasons. First, he said in a sense of detachment, oh, I don't want this. What is the use of this kingdom? I don't want. I'd rather, live a life of a beggar. The second is a sense gratification. He said, sense gratification, Krishna. I don't want to be the emperor of the world. Who wants that? That sounds great. Really sounds really nice. Another reason is when all the men on the battlefield will be killed, you know, the women, they will become shelterless and they will be exploited. Then they will be unwanted progeny, Varna Sankara. Actually, for all the women's sake, I don't want to fight. Ah, very nice. Then he took a very high road. Let's just forgive the Kauravas. You know, Krishna, just forgive. In fact, I've heard in disciplic succession that forgiveness is very good. What's the reason for fighting? So he gives the idea of non-violence. Such a popular idea. Nowadays, Buddhists are so popular because they profess non-violence. Even in the brink of someone does something to you, non-violence. Ah, fantastic. All his reasons were given. Krishna heard them and told him, "You're speaking like a fool. In fact, you should do the very thing that you are averse to, but do it as a matter of duty." Ah, because that dutiful engagement will bring the right detachment from you. Karmanyeva adhikaraste. That was the linchpin verse. And then again in the 8th chapter he tells him, you should continue fighting, but your mind and intelligence must be surrendered unto me. So the rishis, they're very, very clever people. They want, of course, not just are they clever, they genuinely want us to become detached from this world. And therefore they engage us in proper duties from morning till night. So then you'll see that even devotees have, I guess, occupations, jobs, or whatever it might be. I wouldn't say jobs, but everything is seen as service. Whether the service takes them to some place there, or whether the service is in the building here, or whatever it is, the devotees do it in a mood of, or a spirit of duty. And the spirit of duty is towards Krishna. So what looks like, oh, that's just worldly, is not worldly. And how do we know that? When does a person's true character come to the foreground? When there is a crisis. As long as there's no crisis, you can't tell the difference between a karmi and a devotee. You can't tell. Because they look the same, in fact, two hands, two legs, one head, a shirt or pant or sari or whatever they wear. You can't tell the difference. They're doing the same kind of activities. They're cooking, they're eating. You can't generally tell. As soon as there's a crisis, everything becomes so starkly separated. The karmi is into severe anxiety. And the devotee is like, whatever happens, Krishna's there, Krishna will take care. It's the consciousness which is not so easily visible comes to play, comes into play. So that's when you see, whoa, it's the point of crisis. So our dutiful execution of our activities will prepare us that when the crisis comes, the duty is there. That platform of duty will protect us. And that platform of duty makes us detached. I'm doing it not because I like it or I don't like it, because this is my duty. And this duty is something that's ordained by, is given by higher authorities. Simple. Krishna is given, spiritual master is given, I'm doing it. Yeah, there's always dialogue about this kind of occupation, that kind of, all that is separate. But the spirit is dutiful. So generally when we talk of duty, the only example that comes very quickly is of Lord Ram. Of course, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's separate. Besides that, he was told, tomorrow you'll be the emperor of the entire land. What do you think? Whatever you say. He prepared himself. Next morning, he had already taken his special, it's called Avabhritya Snana, a special bath, consecrating him with all the refined elements like milk and yogurt and all the fat, really. And all the royal clothes were being put on. And then he gets a message. By the way, you will not be king. And his answer was, okay. Oh, that's not it. You have to live in exile in the forest for 14 years. Okay. Do I leave now? Leave right now. He walks away. Not even for a moment did Lord Ram say, what happened? What changed? He didn't care. Dasarath Maharaj told me, be the king yesterday, fine. Today he's telling me, go to the forest, fine. Because what I'm attached to is Dasarath Maharaj and his words, not necessarily this or that. Now that's a very high stage, I agree. But that's what's being spoken, that the sages want us to come to that stage of detachment. If it's there, it's there. If it's not there, it's not there. To come there, we have to begin somewhere. And the beginning is not aversion, but dutiful engagement in our prescribed activities. And not, and then Prabhupada goes into not sitting idly or wasting time thinking, oh, that is all wasteful, that is all karmi. No, that's the trap actually. The trap is that it's either aversion or laziness, something that is hidden, it's couched. And if one hides it pretty well for some time, at some point it will show up. That's the verse that Prabhupada quotes from chapter 3, text 9, actually chapter 3, 6. That karmendriyani samyama, that externally it looks like the senses have been controlled. Ye aste manasa smaran, but the mind is really thinking about all these sense gratification things. And he says, smityachara sa uchyate, such a person is a pretender. And one can't pretend for too long. One can put on a good show for some while, for a long while, but not forever. It will be, I guess, exposed. So this mityachara in Hitopadesha. Hitopadesha is a very ancient book that has the Panchatantra in it. And for you guys, I don't know, you know what is Panchatantra? There was a king who had a few sons. And those sons were not very gifted in the higher department. They were not so intelligent. So he tried to put them through school and proper education, and nothing really worked out. So he was a little worried for them. So he said, how do I teach my sons to get some basic intelligence and common sense to live in this world? So he searched for people who can educate his sons. He couldn't find anyone. One fine day, one particular Brahmin came. His name was Vishnu Sharman. And he said, my dear king, I will take up the challenge. I said, all right, please. So all he did was sit with the boys, young princes, and narrate stories to them. And these stories were not about human beings. The stories were about animals. There is a lion in the forest, the story about the fox, you know, the clever, cunning fellow, the story of the crow, the story of the hare and tortoise, and all through such stories, he gave them lessons of how to live in this world. They're fascinating stories. Panchatantra, we used to read when we were young children, and never realized that within them were such nice little, they're very similar to Aesop's fables. I guess that's the same parallel we can draw. Beautiful stories. So here's one story from Panchatantra. There was a donkey who lived a very simple life of labor, and he was kind of bored with his lifestyle. It's like, it's the same thing, man. I wake up, I carry this load there, I carry the load back. I need some excitement in life, I need some action. This is not... So while he was floating around one day, like this here and there, he fell into a big vat, a big container that had indigo in it. Indigo is used for dyeing clothes, a little bluish. So he fell into that indigo, and when he somehow walked out of it, he was blue in color. And suddenly he realized, now I'm very different. I am this blue animal that no one has ever seen. And I will walk around strutting in the villages, And people will be like, wow, who's this guy? I'll get all the attention. I'll get all the respect. So he started moving about. And as he would move about, it's like, wow. They didn't recognize it's a blue, it's a donkey, but they're like, wow. First few days, you know, he got all the respect and honor and like a special, wow, someone. So one day, and all the people are there in the fields, and this guy is also in the fields. And everyone's like looking at him from a distance, gazing, you know. Have you ever seen if you're on a boat and you see a little dolphin go by, and everyone's like, oh, a dolphin, everyone's attention is now on that space. Or if you're, even if you're driving and you see a deer, like, oh, I spotted a deer. Suddenly your attention is on that animal. So they saw this blue thing there, and they're all like just gazing at him. So at some distance, a female donkey started braying loudly. Hee-haw, something. Now he's a donkey after all, so he had to respond. It was more like a urge from within, not that he was even conscious of it. So when she was braying, hee-haw, hee-haw, this guy suddenly went, hee-haw, like responding back. And they all knew, this fellow's not any special animal, he's a donkey. And they all were upset that he was taking them for a ride, so they came with their sticks and beat the heck out of him. So this is this mithyachara. Mithyachara is, you know, one puts up a show, there is something inside that is still there, and when the, I guess, the right kind of sense gratification moves along, it comes out. So that this detachment, this aversion or laziness or whatever it is nicely couched in the spirit of detachment or in the exhibition of detachment, and that will come out. Because that's not, and this is where the spiritual master will remove it, you know, by observing the disciple and engaging them. And as soon as he engages, he knows. And it comes out in many ways. I'll give you an example. As soon as the spiritual master gives the Prabhu this service, Prabhu very happily takes it and then looks who to pass it on to. As soon as he finds the first person, this is for the spiritual master. You do it. Now, of course, one can have a very sharing mentality. That's very nice. But if one passes it on, get it done. This is not nice. But it'll come out in different, for each person it'll come out differently. And the sages don't want that. They want us to be like Manu, this great king who ruled for, you know, how many years can a king rule for? Unless you're Queen Elizabeth and she never dies, or she's just there for a very long time. But generally they rule for like 50 years, 60 years. After that, you know, mind becomes weak, they become senile, and, you know, they don't know what they're doing. Then they're just like the figurehead. Now also in England, when the queen comes, they all bow. We don't know what she's thinking. But this person has been reigning as the king of the universe for 306 million years. Can you imagine that? Such a long time. And with just at the bat of an eyelid, walks away into the forest. Stands on one leg. It's called Tadasana. Tadasana means standing like a tree. You're the yoga expert, you know. Tadasana, tree. And he's contemplating this. Oh, how wonderful these sages. They know how to engage everyone such that one is genuinely detached from these worldly things, so that their engagement of in devotional service is akarmana, without any fruitive reactions. He's appreciating the sages. Anyway, so this verse. Any comments, questions, thoughts, stories?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. Just a brief comment, but it's not my question. Just the comment of the deer you were mentioning. I just saw the deer, I looked out the window at my house the other day, and it was a deer. And for a half hour, my consciousness was consumed. I went outside, and I could see how burnt the Maharaj.
For half an hour, your consciousness
was consumed by the deer. I went outside.
So, just for a stranger deer, for half an hour, it took away our Bharat Maharaj, who took care of the deer.
So my question is related to the fact that you mentioned a point that comes, actually is going to come up in everyone's life, a point of crisis. How would we react to circumstances?
Yeah.
And we could see in the life of many people like Hiranyakashipu, his crisis was prolonged, didn't respect them, so he acted out in much anger as much as possible. But we could also see in the lives of great saints like Draupadi, when she was being derobed, it wasn't like she was saying, Krishna, you got, you know, you'll take care of this, you know, it's piece of cake, I'm not going to even worry about it. She was actually crying out for help. So this is a dilemma maybe devotees were all going to face at one point or another, crisis. And the ideal is that the tendency is that we try to maybe hide our faults because we don't want to be criticized. Oh, you're not as detached as I thought you were. And so then we kind of worry about, if I'm suffering, people are going to call me a pretender, and I don't want that, and therefore I'm not going to reveal, you know, my circumstances to people. And so one last point I appreciate in this regard is that in Bhaktisiddhanta's article, Be Humbler Even Than a Blade of Grass, he said if a task takes more than one person to perform, it's not like I'm going to sit there and tolerate. I'm asking for help. Please help me. So that's one point I appreciate. So how do we handle the dilemma of being detached at the same time, you know, not kind of worrying about what people think, whether I'm a pretender, oh, you're in a point of crisis, so actually you're a pretender, you know, and we feel that criticism. So how do we handle that dilemma, if you understood my question properly? So what is our disposition should be in that situation?
Different people are attached to different things. Some are gross, some are subtle. In fact, everyone has gross and subtle attachments. Gross attachments are to things, and subtle attachments are to some mental vision of ourselves. What will people think of me? Is this the right thing? And what, and all of that. And progressively from gross things, we begin to work on the subtle things. But what's important is we may not be even aware of what our attachments are, which is actually a good thing, because had we known, then we wouldn't be able to even get out of bed. But our prayer always is to Krishna that please help me become detached. Let me help me such that I can make my service genuine without these attachments. Make it genuine. Help me. So he helps in different ways. It's not a crime that in some crisis something comes to the foreground and we say, oh, this was there. But it's between us and Krishna. If someone else is bothered by it, that's their problem. If it comes out, then that's something we need to work on. It's Krishna's way of showing, oh, here's an area to work on or to be aware of. Now that will this thing will keep coming as long as we don't acknowledge it. Suppose we acknowledge it, you know, yeah, I'm actually weak in this area, or I'm not as strong in this area versus that area. That acknowledgement, then it doesn't bother anymore. Accepting ourselves is a very big step, or an important step. And we want the world to accept us in a particular way. And that's a struggle, because it's illusory. It doesn't exist like that. So Krishna helps. So what's our frame of mind? Whatever Krishna helps me with, I take. And if something comes up, you know, we think others think of us this way or that way. Actually, others are busy with their own life, one, and second, they have their own issues going on as well. And even if someone says something about us, after some time, it's forgotten. People move on. But what's the important thing is the ultimate goal. Are we conscious of our ultimate goal? That after this life, we want to aspire to go back to Krishna. Whether it actually happens or not, but that's our aspiration. We have the long-term goal in mind. Short-term, a lot of things will happen. All will happen. Because we're in the environment where the three modes of nature are fully active. So, some things or the other will happen. Some little friction here, some disappointment there, some jubilation here, some failure here, some success there, some happiness here, some distress here. This is all a mixture. And we are meant to traverse through all of that. You know, sometimes there is this, you know, great sense of vow for friendship. And sometimes those friendships are tested, then they become strong again, they're sometimes tested. It just goes through. It's just how it is in this world. It's nothing to be surprised about. Now, that doesn't mean we don't care for people or we don't have friendships. No, that's not the point. The point is, this kind of turbulence is what we expect. When you fly on a plane, you expect turbulence, you have a seat belt, and you know, okay, it's there. When it comes, things will just have to either, you know, just go through it. Most of the problems is when people don't have the right expectation from the environment. We have a wrong expectation. Oh, now everything will be fantastic. No problem. It's all cruising from here on. It's not like that. Even great personalities who have dedicated their life to serving Krishna for years and years and decades, even in their life, there is some turbulence. But their consciousness is not turbulent. Just being in this world is. In Manu's case, who's such an amazing personality, you know what's coming up. He was chased and he was attacked by certain persons who saw him in the forest. Some rakshasas saw him. They're like, ah, and they go after him. He was peacefully standing somewhere on one leg. Even he's attacked. So just the if I have to say it in one sentence, we have to have the right kind of expectations from this world. It's called expectation setting. And the expectation setting is in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, three modes of nature, modes are constantly competing with each other. One takes supremacy over the other two, and this is constantly going on. Or this happens that way, that as the rivers are constantly flowing into an ocean, the urges for sense gratification are constantly battering the consciousness. And then he gives a solution. One needs to be like the ocean who's calm but does not overflow the ocean. So that's a practice. We have to know, okay, this is how the world is. I'm here. This is how it is. This is how it's going to be. So what can I do when all these things come? And here's Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam. Another thing is we always have the course correct method. It's not like crisis comes and we have to be the superheroes, untouched. It doesn't have to be like that. We may do something that is silly or wrong or something, but we always have the opportunity to course correct. Oh, I shouldn't have been like that. I shouldn't have spoken like that. I shouldn't have done like that. Please help me. Please forgive me. And we move on. That's our method. Okay. We'll you have something, Joy? Yeah.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for class. In the verse, it's talking about karma yoga. And in the purport, Prabhupada talks about karma yoga, but he also is talking about the beginning stages of devotional service. Mm-hmm. So are these... two different kinds of activities on the same platform?
There are two major, what we say, trajectories. One trajectory is called the karma, or dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. That's one trajectory. That's what's being spoken by Manu. And then there is the Bhagavata trajectory that Prabhupada talks about. That one's activities are centered around Krishna. They look very much like this, but they're centered around Krishna. Prabhupada's objective is, regardless of what's being spoken, that our attention doesn't drift from devotional service. This is no different from how Bhagavad Gita is. Krishna speaking, chapter 3, Karma Yoga. None of the purport talks of Karma Yoga per se. Prabhupada touches Karma Yoga but speaks about it as devotional service. So, Karma Yoga is one does what one likes, one is attached to one's activity, one is attached to one's fruit, but he gives some fruit of it, the fruit of his labor to Krishna. He does his thing, but gives a little to Krishna. That's Karma Yoga. And Bhakti Yoga is, he does what seems like his thing, but he does it as the activity is a service to Krishna, the fruit is also given as service to Krishna. Quite simply said. There are more nuances to it. So here he's talking about a principle. And the principle is that when someone is in the mode of ignorance, to take them to mode of goodness, even goodness there is some attachment, but to take them beyond goodness, to transcendence, the path is not always, oh you're here, just go here. It's not the path, always. The path sometimes is, you're in ignorance, at least come to passion. Something is like a lazy person, let's say. You tell the lazy person, don't sleep, don't waste your time. Get a job. Right? That's the phrase. Get a job. Because when you get a job, you have to get out, physically move, and fall into this competitive environment where if you don't perform, you're finished. So that advice is actually an excellent advice. Versus, you're not doing anything, you're just lazy, you know, chant Hare Krishna all the time. It's not always possible. In principle. So it's told, do something. Now, an expert can bring this person into all activities of Krishna consciousness. That's fine. That's what Prabhupada did. But to tell a person to go from here to here is actually nice. You see Narada Muni do that. When Murugari was half killing the animals, Narada's advice was not, don't kill, which is up here. He told him, kill them completely. Don't half kill them completely. You'll never hear a sage say, you kill them completely. But that was Narada's instruction. Why? Because this stage is better than this stage. This is very, very cruel to half kill them, and while they're, you know, gasping for breath, to stand there and actually like it. Very nice. That's very highly ignorant. They said, kill them completely. Make it quick. Clean. And then gave him a way to come all the way up.
To decide somebody needs to come from this stage to this stage or from here to here, one has to be under the expert guidance of a spiritual master. That's what his expertise is.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. Athagre rishaya karmani hante. The rishis, the sages, or the spiritual master, as Prabhupada says, they know and they will
Yeah, only a person who is beyond the three modes can actually help. Anybody within the three modes, it's trial and error, they can guide, but the principle or the general path should be given by a very advanced devotee, and then I feel that others can support the individual soul to go from, like, to follow that instruction.
Okay. All right, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaura Premanande Hari Om.